Welcome to this new edition of Dognostics Podcast, where two ladies and a couple of dogs all hang out and geek out regarding dogs, dog behavior, pet care, and anything else pet professional. It was 2008, and I was the executive director of the Humane Society in Bay County, Panama City. I was also a professional dog trainer and had my own business, The Dogsmith, as I still do. And at the time, we had miniature horses, miniature donkeys, sheep, goats, ducks, peafowl, chickens, all kinds of animals. We had a menagerie. And we also had a cat and two dogs that were ours, Dobie and Bailey, and there was always a foster dog in the house. So I'd made some promises to my husband that I would not bring any more animals home. And it wasn't unusual for our local veterinarian to call me if somebody was surrendering an animal for being euthanized or someone just didn't want an animal. And I would pop along and pick them up and bring them home, which is how we ended up with over 40 animals. But we'd never had a small dog. I had friends with small dogs. They were kind of cute. They always had really cute names like Gidget, Gadget, or people names like Peter, Sarah. And in our boarding facility, we got lots of little dogs. And we treated them like little dogs deserve to be treated. They had their own special area that was all decked out to look like somebody's lounge. But we'd never had a small dog. It wasn't something that I'd ever really considered. Until that one day at the Panama City Humane Society, when I arrived to work and wandered through the cat area and saw this dirty, bedraggled little creature sitting in a cat condo all on her own. Wow. Why is there a tiny dog in the cat condo? And Nicole, our vet tech, who was never more than a couple of feet away from said dog at the time, explained that the small dog had been thrown over the reception desk the previous day by a mother who said her teenage child had brought it home, having been gifted it from a neighbor. The said dog had been seen by the veterinarian and had written on the notes, almost dead, dehydrated, had a full house, coccidia, giardia, all the different types of worms. And they really didn't know what to do with said dog, except for give it supportive therapy and take the recommendations of the veterinarian. However, Nicole was very upset because that weekend she was having to travel to Texas to visit her family. And she'd become quite a stakeholder of this small said dog. And she was worried that in the 3 days she was gone, the care may fall below what she considered acceptable minimum standards. So I begrudgingly offered to take said dog home, which is what she was doing at night with said dog, and care for it. Immediately her face shone, and within about 3 minutes, said dog was in a cardboard box with all the necessary tools and equipment to care for it for a 3 day period. The back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh my God, what's Rick gonna say? Another animal I'm bringing home, but it's only for 3 days. That's fine. So I set off to go home at the end of the shift and realized that I had a 50-mile drive. And the position I had at the Humane Society was a volunteer position. I was helping out a friend of mine who was the president. The facility was had almost closed down due to lack of funding. So we'd sort of swooped in there as a team of supposed, well, not supposed, business experts to try to get it back on track. Anyway, driving home, I lived about 50 miles away. I realized that this wasn't the perfect vessel for carrying a small dog that weighed less than about half a pound in a box. Given that she seemed to have quite a large amount of energy, given everything she was supposedly carrying and all the treatment she was on. So I stopped off on the way at the Humane Society thrift store and grabbed a big stuffed teddy bear, popped it in the box, and she immediately cuddled in and nestled down. And I drove home. When I got home, I was more concerned with how I was going to manipulate my husband and fend off any potential problems than anything else. So I popped small dog in the palm of my hand and put my hand behind my back and walked into the house to be greeted with a, "Hey babe, you're home." And I pulled my arm around and held out small said dog and said, "Don't be angry, it's just for 3 days." And I quickly blurted out the story. I then proceeded to set up a small crate in the Florida room with water and food and blankets and towels so that the little pup would be comfortable. Made sure she had a medication, tracked her food. Food intake wasn't good. Got up a couple of times during the night to make sure all was well. And then woke up around 5:30 the following morning, panicking about getting her out because I didn't want her to feel that she had to go to the bathroom in her crate. Only to find said husband gone and said small dog gone. So I wandered outside. We had a small farm. And husband was walking around with said small dog tucked into his down vest as he fed the other creatures. What else can I say? We never looked back. Said dog was named Gizmo. And Gizmo lived with us for 12 years. Gizmo is a strange creature. She got along fabulously with all the animals and the other dogs. But when she was removed from our property, she literally fell apart. Didn't like other people, didn't like being out in public. And that was fine, because at home, she was just the perfect dog. We moved house with her several times. She became fabulous at agility. She would romp around our 20 acres with my Aussie and my Kelpie. Fast, fast, fast. Fabulous. Absolutely adorable. Didn't really have any health problems until she got a little bit older and she had patella problems. She was a Jack-a-chai. Probably an important component I missed out in the story. She was a Jack Russell Chihuahua mix, so had the sort of size of a Chihuahua with the look of a Jack Russell, and had that fabulous combination of personalities. Let's fast forward. Fast forward to a couple of weeks ago, when Gizmo, who we knew had a heart murmur, it was diagnosed when she was young, suddenly took a turn for the worst. And we took her to the vet. She was going every 6 months to have senior wellness checks and had recently had a senior's wellness check where the vet had said that all her blood panels and urine, everything was absolutely fabulous with the exception of her heart, which was getting a little bit worse, but was nothing to massively concern ourselves with at this point. But it was time for some good heart medications. And given that she was aging, allow her to sort of self-regulate and self-pace and not push her with agility, walks, play, that kind of stuff. 2 weeks later, I was on a meeting in the morning and I just literally closed off with Susan Nilsson. And Rick asked me to have a look at Gizmo. She was standing in a posture that resembled an English bulldog. And immediately it became obvious that the posture was designed to facilitate breathing. She was raspy and coughing. So we rushed her to the vet. And the vet was thankful that, being a pet professional, I was asking all the right questions and wasn't surprised by some of the answers. So the bottom line was that her congestive heart disease had just suddenly taken a turn for the worst. And she really was struggling. And we could send her to a cardiologist, but it could take several weeks to get the appointment. And all it would do is buy us a few months. There wasn't anything else our vet could do, who, by the way, was absolutely fabulous through this whole process. Now, I'd spoken to my vet a few weeks before when we'd first moved here and asked about whether they offered a Lap of Love service, because Lap of Love was not available in our area. And I'd used their services before when we euthanized Bailey, who had cancer. And it was such an amazing service that it took the misery, or some of the misery, or made it as pleasant an experience as it could possibly be, because we euthanized and said goodbye to her at home. on her bed, feeding her liver treats. It was just a lovely experience with nice memories, not euthanizing a dog on a cold veterinary table in an environment where the pet was stressed. And my vet said, no, they didn't know anybody, but they did do that service for some of their clients if there was a need there. So I had a level of comfort that if we must do that at some point, we had the ability to be able to have our vet come to the home. So about 2 years ago, I spent some time with Colleen Ellis and went through a 2-day workshop that PPG hosted on how we say goodbye to pets and how we support pet owners through saying goodbye to their pets. And I have to tell you, it was one of the best workshops I've ever been to. And several people came to this workshop, and there was actually a group of girls, PPG members, that came. They are friends, they work together, and they're all over the country. And they thought they'd use it as a good weekend to sort of get to know and spend some time together. But they came sort of not really knowing what to expect. And independently and collectively, they all said they gained so much from it. And I did too. And I didn't realize how important that information was until suddenly I found myself in a veterinary office with our dog, our gorgeous little dog, having to think about the timing to say goodbye. And I remember Colleen saying that a lot of pet owners struggle with finding the right time or the right day. And there never is. There's never the right time. There's never the right day. But what there is the right window. So I asked our vet, are we in the window yet? And she knew immediately what I was asking. And she said, we're almost there. So Rick and I looked at each other and said, we're not going to spend weeks going to cardiologists. We're not going to put her through that when all we get from it is maybe a couple of weeks or maybe a month. And if there's nothing that can be given to her to make her more comfortable, I'm certainly not going to sit back and watch my dog struggle. Having had asthma as a child, I know how distressing it can be when you're not able to breathe. So my vet said, well, go home, have a think about it, and we can schedule something. So I said to Rick, let's schedule something now. And then the time we have left, we can make it just wonderful, a wonderful celebration of her life and a lovely way to say goodbye. So we agreed the veterinarian would come out on Friday, which gave us 2 days and a couple of nights to really cherish our kit, our fur kit. We got home that afternoon, and within an hour of being at home, Gizmo took a turn for the worst. And I called the vet, and the vet said, I'm on my way. So we were not only in the window, but this was the right time in the window. And the veterinarian came out. I was distressed because we weren't able to give Gizmo any sort of pre-sedation, which didn't matter, actually, because once the vet got there, we were able to give her an injectable sedative that put her to sleep within seconds, even though it was only supposed to take 20 minutes. And she actually died as she was sedated, because her poor little heart, just with any kind of sedation in her system, her heart just couldn't keep up. So we still went through the euthanization process just to be sure, but she was ready to go. And we were both devastated, absolutely devastated. And it took us about 4 days to get to the point where we could even really begin to think about the good times, because there was just so much pain there. And I was so grateful for everything I'd learned from that workshop in terms of how to grieve and how to make the decision and how to say goodbye, that I thought it was an important topic. By the way, I'll put links to this, but if any of you are interested in taking that course, Colleen offers a really good online version of it, and I highly recommend that anyone that has pets takes the program, because it looks at everything. It talks about quality of life. It talks about how to make the decision. It talks about how to celebrate. It talks about the things that you can do to mitigate the pain for pet owners. It talks about the services that are now available. So it really is a fabulous resource. And as pet professionals, we so often say goodbye or have to support our clients saying goodbye to their pet dogs, that it really is a skill that we need to know and be competent at using. So what I wanted to do in today's podcast is talk about grieving and making the decision to say goodbye. And this will sort of cover the grieving process, which obviously incorporates pets, family members. And I think there might be some really good sort of nuggets of information that you can pull from it. So first of all, let me just say that philosophically, I am a huge believer in quality of life. And I think the one fabulous gift that I can help my pets with is that they don't have to suffer needlessly, and that we can understand when that window is and make the decision within the window that best suits us and suits them. The second is that you can plan and prepare for the saying goodbye to loved pets. And I know that can be difficult sometimes, because sometimes we find it hard to make the decision. But it certainly helps with the process, and it certainly helps afterwards when you can reflect back on the wonderful things that you did and the time that you spent together in those last few days. So when a person you love dies, or a pet, it's absolutely natural to grieve and to express your grief. And we expect that our friends and family are going to provide understanding to us and comfort. And we get that with people, don't we? But when it's a pet, sometimes some people are less understanding, because if they're not pet owners, they may not understand the deep effect that having a pet has on our lives and the level and intensity of emotion that we feel towards our pets. And we know, because we hear this expression, it's just a pet. And you can replace that with, it's just a horse, it's just a dog, it's just a cat. And we know that nothing could be further from the truth. We know that our pets are family members, and we love them. We cherish them. They're a constant companion. We confide in them. We talk to them. We give and receive deep affection. And we count on their presence as a critical and important part of our everyday life. So when a pet dies, we feel overwhelmed by the intensity of the sorrow. Animals provide us with companionship, acceptance, emotional support, and don't forget, unconditional love. And when you understand and accept this bond between humans and animals, then you can take the first step to coping with the loss. And you can recognize that it's okay, it's imperative to grieve when pets die. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise. You have the right. It's also important to understand that grief is personal and individual, and we all experience it differently. And that will depend on our personality, our support system, and our natural coping mechanisms, and many other things. There are no rules, there's no timetable, there's no linear progression on how we should move through the grief. Some people feel better after a few weeks or months. For others, it can take years. Gizmo died 2 weeks ago. I still feel the pain on a daily basis. I still look for her in her positions on the sofa, the bed, in the office at certain times of the day. I still call her for meals with Doogie when it's time to feed them. I still look for her when I'm outside gardening. So don't let anyone tell you there's timetables or rules. There isn't. It's a non-linear process and you can't control it. It's critical that you allow yourself, or you empower your clients, to move through the process, and that you're patient and show compassion for those that you're supporting and allow the process to unfold. What I'm going to do now is just go over some of the, or sort of look at some insights into the stages and symptoms of grief. And I hope that this information will help you if you're having to say goodbye to a pet, or will provide you some information to help support others through the grief process. Now, grief is often described in stages. But we don't, again, this is not a linear process. You don't spend, you know, a month in each stage. Sometimes you can get to stage three and then end up back at stage one. But you have to acknowledge that you're going to experience some of these stages in some order. And that we should never pass judgment on ourselves or others. Because again, when we lose a pet, like any family member, we have the right to grieve and to fully experience the grief. Your feelings are normal. And it's important to remember that at some point it will get easier. You may not ever get over the loss, but you'll survive it. So here are the first five general stages of grief, and these are as described by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. The first stage, number one, is denial. This can't be happening. The second is anger. Why did this happen to me? Who to blame? The third is bargaining. Make this not happen and I will. If I could only have another month, I would. Stage four is depression. I just can't bear this. I'm too sad to do anything. And stage five is acceptance. I acknowledge this has happened and I acknowledge I cannot change it. So while these five stages of grief may appear to be steps in a process, they're not. They're not meant to neatly package up your grief. There's no typical loss. There's no typical grief. Grief is as individual as we are. So remember that. So let's look at some grief indicators and the common signs and symptoms of grief. Shock and disbelief. It's really hard to accept a death. Even with my Gizmo, she was 12. She had a heart problem, but it was still a shock. There was still disbelief that this fabulously gorgeous, comical little creature was no longer going to be an important everyday part of our lives. You can feel numb and question whether the loss really happened. You can feel reluctance to even notify others, and I know I certainly experienced this. I reached out to one person immediately. And then within a couple of days, a second and a third, people that I work with that needed to understand that I was taking some time off just to be with my husband and to grieve. Not everybody wants to go out on social media and just make a public announcement. Often people do that after a few days when they've had chance to sort of accept that it's happened. So that's a normal reaction. Even if intellectually we've accepted their death, we don't necessarily want to call or write or even show up to let people know. Sadness. Profound sadness is a universal experience. We all understand how that feels. But it can also lead to a feeling of aloneness or isolation. We can sometimes believe that the pain is so overwhelming for us that we think there's no way that anybody can understand the depth of our grief. And that can drive us into deeper sorrow. And even if you have a friend who's lost their dog, we tend to be selfish about the relationships we have with our own pets. We tend to think that it's such a unique relationship and so intense that it's just not the generic relationship that other people have with their pets, which actually we know is not true if we think about it. Then there's guilt. You may feel guilt over something that you said or did, or something that you didn't say or do, or something that you could have seen or responded to more quickly. And that often is what plagues us in those early days when we've lost someone we love. Anger. Regardless of how our pet died or our family member, we often feel anger. We try to project the anger onto somebody else. We want to blame a situation, maybe a caregiver, maybe somebody that we feel could have done more. And if you can't direct the anger against a specific source, then what tends to happen is that everyday small injustices that we experience become bigger and bigger. And in dog training, we talk about trigger stacking, don't we? And again, this is very normal. And sometimes you have to just stop and let go of your anger. It's part of the process. Another symptom is fear. a loss can trigger fear on different levels. Fear of our own mortality, fear of losing people or animals that we just feel are too important for our lives. We're afraid of how we're going to function. How is our life going to look now that this person or pet is no longer sharing it with us? And then there's physical pain. We often think of grief as just emotional, but we know that emotion can manifest physically. We can feel nausea, fatigue, we can get lowered immunity. People suffering grief and loss can gain weight or lose weight, have insomnia, aches and pains appear more. And although, again, it's difficult, we've got to make sure that we maintain our health during the grief period. So working in our industry, if you look at it just from being a professional, we have to acknowledge that our clients lose their pets. And there's so much that we can do to offer them support, from helping them make the right decisions to understanding the emotion and the tremendous loss they're feeling. And that it's not just anything. It was their world. It was really, really important. And we know this because we've lost our own pets. And I remember when we first moved from our farm and moved down to Tampa and bought more land, one of the thoughts we had was that we should get more animals. And we both agreed that we didn't want to do that because when you have that many animals, you're always losing one. A bobcat grabs a chicken, or a snake bites a duck, or old age, or something else in the environment. And it becomes very depressing when you're constantly losing animals that you care for. So think about the animals that you've got, and how healthy are they? What's their age? And if they're seniors, are you having senior wellness checks done so that you can stay on top? Because diseases and illnesses progress quickly in older animals. Maybe make a little journal entry about the perfect day with your pet. So if you suddenly find yourself having to make hard decisions and you're in that window, you've already planned out the perfect day. Maybe going for a walk, maybe buying your dog or your cat a beef burger or some fresh chicken. Spending time with them, just doing the things they do. Taking time away from work so that you can dedicate every minute of those last days or day to your pet and just spending some lovely quality time. Think about how you would like to say goodbye and the location and plan for it. Think about whether you're going to bury your pet or have cremation. And then how will that work? What will that look like? Think about the fact that if you have other pets in the house, they're going to be impacted as well by the loss of one of their siblings. So they're going to need some extra patience and extra time and some extra spoiling. So remember, unless a pet dies through an emergency that is a heart attack or a significant accident that kills them quickly, in my experience, most of the ways our pets die, we can certainly plan for them. And even though it's never going to be a pleasant experience, we can mitigate some of that pain by some careful planning and the ritualized way that we say goodbye to them, which will hopefully leave us with more comfortable, more pleasant, and more deserving memories. That's a wrap for this week. Come visit us, www.dognosticseducation.com.